We Made This.
Hello and welcome to We Buy Records. I'm Paul Field and I'm joined as ever by the lovely Mr. Tim Scullion. Hello, Tim.
Hello there, Paul. How are you today?
Very good, very good. Now, we were on the radio together.
Yes.
And we did it in person. So if you haven't heard that, type We Buy Records Radio Free Matlock into the Google and you should find a link to it on Mixcloud. 2 hours of music and chat from me and Tim.
We are sadly now back to recording remotely. So any sparkle and joy that you heard in the radio show, that'll be gone now. So sorry about that.
Yes. Right. A little bit of housekeeping, Tim. We lovely listeners have been buying us some coffees this month. A big shout out to Rob Freeman, to the lovely Tom Berry, to somebody called The Eternal Party. And he says, come on, party hearty.
Gosh.
DJ Vinyl Phoebes, here's a coffee for your in-person recording.
Thank you.
Michael says, cheers for a great show as always. Gavin Hogg says, and he's only written this out because he wants me to try and pronounce it, enjoy a Frappa Cappellettuccino on me. And somebody called Anonymous said, we love the show.
Thank you ever so much also to Mark Howell, to Steve Gray, to Soda Scone, or was it Soda Scone? I don't think we ever got to the bottom of that.
Nope.
To Skippy Vinyl, to the lovely Clara Pandy, and to Joel at Brighter Day Vinyl. Look him up on Twitter and you can join his Thursday flick throughs. Thank you also so much to Patrick Lydon. Thanks everybody. It's just brilliant. Thank you so much. It really helps. We do have costs with the pod. It's sort of more expensive than it should be for us to record each episode on the software that we use. If you would like to make a financial contribution support to us, you can do via Ko-fi, which is ko-fi.com/WeBuyRecords. And you can click the link, and if you want to give us a couple of quid, you're welcome to. But you don't have to.
Tim, we're up for an award again.
Yes. Have you voted? Are we allowed to vote for ourselves?
I did. They all count. Hey, mate, when last year we were up against those K-pop people, so they have millions of followers. So this would really, really be appreciated if you could trot along to podcastawards.com. We're in two categories, the People's Choice and Music. Last year, we did get to the finals. It's very tricky as a small indie. There's a lot of professional networks who hoover up all the awards. But, you know, we defied the odds last year and made the final. And fingers crossed we can do it again this year. But we do need you to vote. It's really, really important that you do that.
Wouldn't it be funny if this episode was literally just a series of us asking the listeners to do things? Because first we had buy us a coffee. Now we've got vote for us. What else can we get them to do? Who's free on a Saturday afternoon? Because we do get quite busy in the shop then. All right, it's a bit of fun.
Should we do some little follow-up to Record Store Day, Tim?
Yes, all right. So listeners may remember me going on about Minty and buying their record. Well, a friend of mine buying a record on my behalf and me not knowing that I was going to have to pay 60 quid, then discovering that the RRP, in fact, is more like 75 quid, and then discovering that Rough Trade, for example, have it on their website at 80 quid. Well, there's more to it than that even, Paul, it turns out. So I was looking on the official record label website for Minty for these reissues, and I was very confused and perplexed to discover that the intention was for there to be a 2020 Minty celebration, which was thwarted by COVID, and they were going to do some kind of comeback events and stuff and bits and pieces. But what they did do was put out a load of limited edition 7-inch singles and the album Open Wide on double clear vinyl. Does that sound sort of...
But it was different to the one that came out on Record Store Day, wasn't it?
So that's been out and available and on this website, on this record label website, for several months, as far as I can tell. I keep meaning to use the Wayback Machine Internet Archive to do my research properly, but I haven't bothered to do that. But I'm pretty certain it's been there for months, with an RRP, Paul, of £50.
Right.
So I got in touch with the record label. Now, I mean, that's still, between us, Paul, that's still fucking stupid for an album. But anyway, let's ignore that element. Way cheaper than the Record Store Day RRP for their version. So I messaged the record label on Twitter and asked them just to point out to me, well, so what's the difference? Just so I can, as a fan of Minty, I'd like to know what the difference is between the Record Store Day release and your one that was already available. And they said, oh, it's the same.
Right.
So, Paul.
So they must have reduced the price of the other one then, surely.
No, it was cheaper before Record Store Day for the exact same item. And when I got in touch with them, it was still available on their website for £50 to order there and then.
Mm.
Or you could go onto Rough Trade's website and order it for £80. And when I pushed them on how the two prices can be so different and when and how their release dates could be different, because I thought it was an exclusive Record Store Day release. They said, oh, thanks, that's our mistake. And they put the price up on their own website.
Of course they did. Fantastic. Well done, Minty. That's just amazing.
No judgment. We can't presume to know what's going on behind the scenes. But as a story, it doesn't feel like a very happy ending for the consumer, does it?
No. Well, there was a couple of other Record Store Day releases. One which I picked up, which was the Italo House double LP.
Very good record.
That's coming out again. I think it's either out now or about to be re-released. Exactly the same version, just not Record Store Day. And Graham Needham pointed out that the Ultravox did a double CD, Record Store Day exclusive limited edition 2 CD.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it's now available at retail just 3 weeks later. If you're going to do a Record Store Day release, it needs to be for that day. Because what's the point in queuing up and going for all that faff if you could have just bought it anyway? Or you can buy it again. It just doesn't make any sense. It's either exclusive or it's not.
I've got an even cleverer idea, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Ban Record Store Day.
Well, we'll end on this one, Tim. As you know, we were hoodwinked into buying that Chromatica album by Lady Gaga, which clearly purported to be three albums. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
trifold, super heavy, 2 kilo.
That's it. Yeah, it was like, was it 900 grams or something stupid for one record?
I think 850 grams, 900 grams.
Someone on eBay paid £244.55 for a copy of that. Through the fear of missing out, Tim.
Was it on the day?
Yes. And there were loads of copies that went for above 150. And I mean dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens.
Wow.
A week later, it was in stock at Juno for £40. So well done, everyone, who whacked the price up to near sort of six times what it should have been. And last word on Lady Gaga. She released some Chromatica Oreos and somebody on eBay is asking £10,858 for a packet. You, sir, go and take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror. Shall we do the news?
Definitely.
Tim, how do you fancy a lovely music-related footstool? Fancy one of those?
Music-related footstool. No.
Okay, what about if it was a faux leather footstool?
Music-related faux leather footstool. Yes.
What if I said it was Factory Records?
No.
Are you now? How excited are you now?
I'm less excited than when you said it was faux leather.
Oh, and it's available in Selfridges.
Oh, now I'm more excited again. Paul, it's a roller coaster.
It's £700.
Right, so this is a for real thing. There is a faux leather footstool.
Yep.
that has yep. what factory branding on it.
Yep.
And it's yep. approaching a grand in Selfridges.
Available at Selfridges. Yes.
Can I see? I'd like to see a picture of this.
It's what Tony Wilson would have wanted.
Yeah, exactly right. Here we go. Factory footstool. Is this really real? Factory footstool.
Yes, it's really real.
Selfridges. Oh, piss off. Piss off.
Shall I put you down as a maybe?
Jesus Christ. Wipe with a clean, dry cloth.
I mean, what are you going to be doing with it if you spent 700 quid on it? You wouldn't want to put your feet on it, would you?
No. Wow. Who the hell is this for?
Don't know.
There is that thing, isn't there, of like, as, you know, when yesterday's counterculture becomes today's comfortably well-off early middle-aged person with disposable income, it does become a license to print money from all those brands that they liked in the past. Like, you know, look at all the Britpop reissues that are coming out now, and 90s kids saying, please take my money. Fucking footstool.
Tim,
I'm not happy about that.
We have some positive news though. I've been talking to Joe Daniel about the indie label market, which is happening this Saturday, the 10th of July.
This year is our 10th anniversary year. We've been started in 2011, and it's amazing to think that it's been going that long, really. You know, because it started off as just a one-off. The idea was to have a bunch of record label bosses just come and sort of flog records like they were at a market stall. That was kind of the concept. And it was actually, initially, it was almost to get label bosses sort of out of their comfort zone a little bit, or back into their, what would have been their comfort zone when they first started the label, you know, which is kind of being really passionate about music and grabbing people and saying, you know, listen to this and this is what you need to hear. And, you know, whatever the early releases would have been for any of those labels when they started out, they would have had to have, you know, done a lot of convincing, I suppose, and talking about it. I certainly did anyway. I mean, I used to run a label and I used to kind of walk around pubs with like three copies of whatever the latest, you know, the first release anyway, and say, look, this is something, just approach people who I thought might be into it and say, look, you want to buy this for £3, you know, so I could get some money to spend at the bar.
And how have things evolved from when you were, you know, on a market stall down in Berwick Street to a much bigger event at Cold Drops Yard?
Yeah, it's evolved quite a lot. You know, we're a lot more organised now and there's a lot more people involved, a lot more labels involved. The first one really was just the sort of contacts I had and then using them to try and convince a few other of their kind of peers to do it as well. So I knew Lawrence from Domino pretty well, and I mean, we had Mute and Rough Trade and Heavenly, and I kind of, yeah, just sort of had a meeting with each of them and just said, look, you know, want you to do this, and it's got to be the founder who does it. And they all just were curious enough to say yes, you know. And I think the fact that I was saying, well, look, he's doing it, so, you know, why don't you do it? And then we managed to get everyone on board. And then the reason we carried on with it was because it was the fire that happened in the London riots and destroyed the Sony warehouse, which had, you know, near enough everyone's stock in it. There was someone who started a fund for record labels, and then we managed to get hold of that fund to spend on the second label market in London, which was a sort of helping out for labels who needed to make back some cash quickly after that stock went up in flames. And it just went from there. We realised there was a lot more interest in it than we thought there would be, and loads more labels than I ever thought there was. You know, I always thought there was the indies was quite a small world, but actually there's hundreds and hundreds of independent labels, and way more now than there was even then. So we've never really been short of people to approach or ideas for new labels to do it, and that's kind of led us to where we are now. We've got a sort of 70 record labels, I think, doing this one.
Oh, wow.
Which is really nice. Yeah, it's good. And, you know, over the years, lots of them have become friends and people that we, you know, we look forward to seeing. It's a good community.
So for those who haven't been before, paint me a brief picture of what people can expect to find when they arrive on the day.
It's like a very big farmer's market. And instead of getting you know, cheese and bread and whatever else you get at a farmer's market. It's records and beer as well. We've got an exciting DJ lineup this time. A guy called Gerald is DJing.
Oh, wow.
Andy Bell from Ride is DJing.
And when visitors come to the stalls, it's the labels typically aren't just selling their back catalogue. There's quite often special editions, test presses, white labels. This is where to go if you want to get something, you know, avoiding flippers for a bargain.
What I quite like about it is that often these things won't really be publicised in advance. So you kind of just turn up and you can flick through and find some really incredible things. Oh, we've had amazing stuff. You know, we've had a record that was literally one copy ever made of a Radiohead remix by JBXX to very, very limited quantities of lots of other very special things. And yeah, special editions, things that are kind of hard to put in shops, box sets, light boxes, yeah, all kinds of weird and wonderful concepts for presenting vinyl, a vinyl board game.
Oh, wow.
A Zoetrope, you know, that kind of cinema thing where you spin, yep, spin around with the holes and you sort of see a record version of one of those. Yeah, lots of amazing stuff. The stalls always look incredible because all the labels are so kind of inventive and really great at putting across their vinyl.
Talking of the labels, now you said that you've got 70 there. I'm not going to ask you to list 70, but I might put you on the spot and ask you to just to pick a handful of your favourites.
Some obvious, more obvious ones like 4AD, who that's their 40th anniversary this year, and they always bring great records. I mean, they've got an incredible roster, so you'll find some great stuff there, and also obviously an amazing catalogue too. We've got a few new ones, Burning Witches. It'd be interesting to see.
Oh, yeah, I know those guys. Yeah, excellent.
Deptford Northern Soul. Looking forward to that one. Fire, a mainstays. I think they've almost done every market that we've done, and they always have a really great selection and lots of exciting new signings. Heavenly, who are brilliant and old friends too. Hyperdub are doing it this time. They haven't done it for a while. And Ninja Tune, Big Dadda. Yeah, there's loads, actually.
So many.
Lots of really good ones.
Well, I was at the last one, and it was just so many. It was almost overwhelming. I was shocked at how many were there.
Yeah. I quite like the sort of compilation, sort of reissue-y labels, like Mr. Bongo, Jazzman, Dynamite Cuts, that kind of stuff. They're all there. They do really well at the market. You know, they're sort of soul jazzy type labels where they'll find some very obscure scene from the late 60s, early 70s or something, or music from Christmas Island 72 to 75, you know, and then package it together in some really beautiful looking gatefold and sell that. I like those ones.
Lastly, the most important thing, when, where, and any tips for first time visitors?
When, it's the 10th of July, and where is Cold Drops Yard in King's Cross, behind King's Cross Station, next to Granary Square. And tips for first-time buyers, bring lots of cash. But yeah, we've got another event on Carnaby Street the following weekend, and we're going to have another whole bunch of labels there, where we're taking over Carnaby Street for the first market of this kind on Carnaby Street. It may even be the first market on Carnaby Street, but we've got Domino, Mute are doing that one, Soul Jazz, and lots and lots of other labels too. It's not quite as big. It's about 20 labels in total, but it'll be a really fun day. And Soho Radio are broadcasting all day from Carnaby Street too.
Joe Daniel there. Thank you, Joe, for talking to us. Paul, I've got a question for you.
Mm?
Who's at it this week?
Oh, who's at it this week? Well, Tim, this week we have Lord. All hail the discless format.
Right.
An eco-conscious music box will be available for purchase as an alternative to a CD. This innovative offering will contain extra visual content, handwritten notes, exclusive photos, and a download card. The card will give purchasers a high-quality download of the music, two exclusive bonus tracks, and access to some special surprises along the way. The surprise is, Tim, there's no CD in the box. When talking about the concept, Lord said, "I decided early on in the process of making this album that I also wanted to create an environmentally kind, forward-thinking alternative to the CD. this lovely box of printed matter is yours for £16.
But this is brilliant. So she's releasing an album. She's cleverly not manufacturing CDs or vinyl in order to kind of save the planet. She's just releasing it as a discless box. I think that's really good.
No, there is a vinyl version. It's just there's no CD.
Oh, but vinyl pressings are really kind of bad for the environment. And if you want to save the world and encourage people to download, then just sell a download or let them stream it. Why manufacture anything and have the carbon footprint of delivery trucks sending them around the world? It doesn't make any sense at all.
It makes no sense. Follow the money, Tim. Always follow the money.
But yeah, video games are doing the same thing where they are. You can go into game shops, you can go into Sainsbury's or whatever to the computer game section, and you can pick up and buy what looks like a Nintendo Switch game in a normal box. And in tiny letters in the top corner, it says that this box is a download version of the game that you're buying in a physical shop that you've driven to. And, you know, and that you've got to pay for the lights to be on the shop. So the whole system is breaking down, Paul. Greta Thunberg would be most displeased, I suspect, even though it's maybe, you know, the intentions are possibly good. Well, Paul, let me ask you this. Paul's opinion. Do you think that this is a valiant attempt to do something good, or do you think that it is bullshit?
I think it is bullshit. And it's just a way to reduce the manufacturing costs and trouser some extra money.
And still have something to put in Walmart.
Yes, basically.
Sorry, Lord.
It's a no from me, Tim. Plus, if you owned a second-hand record shop, what good is that to you?
Well, that's absolutely right. So
it has a resale value of zero.
Of zero. And it's same with video game download boxes. You pay 40 quid, or in this case, whatever, 16 quid. It is just of no value. Mind you, people will pay, you know, $12.99 to download MP3s. And they're equally of no value. But the thing about that is, Paul, you don't even get a cardboard box. Where's your printed matter? It's a no from me.
Right, Tim, who else is at it this week?
I don't know.
Well, what about Amazon's new monthly vinyl subscription service?
Yes, this looks genuinely horrendous. Paul, do you want to talk us through it?
When I originally saw this, I thought, well, let's not be mean about it because it might be really useful for people who are new to collecting records. You know, it could be a good thing. Until I saw the review of it in Variety, which, if you look closely, there's a greyed out bit of text. It says, all products and services featured by Variety are independently selected by Variety editors. However, we may receive a commission on orders placed through it to retail links, and the retailer may receive certain data for accounting purposes. Basically, it's a shill article because it says it's absolutely amazing.
What a surprise that after that little caveat at the start, they would say this is a fantastic service that you should definitely do. So the gist of it is, Paul, this is initially in America, I believe.
Yep.
The Puffpiece article opens with the sentence, time is a flat circle. Now, come on, that's a pretty strong opening gambit, isn't it, to get me to sign up to a monthly subscription service?
Oh, yeah.
Amazon Vinyl of the Month Club is a brand new subscription service from the online retail behemoth that makes it easier than ever to track down choice albums. Well, that's not fucking true, is it? You don't get to track down choice albums. You get sent an album of Amazon's choosing.
You do.
The program, which Amazon rolled out over the last few months, costs $24.99 a month, okay? So $25, let's say that's 20 quid, 21 quid, right?
Yeah.
Subscribers, so you might think, oh, well, maybe you get, you know, like two records or a record and a 7-inch and, you know, bits and pieces. Subscribers will receive one hand-picked record from the golden era of vinyl each month, selected by the Amazon Music team. Amazon cites artists of the 60s and 70s such as Pink Floyd, Aretha Franklin, ABBA, Fleetwood Mac, Led Zeppelin, and Miles Davis as examples of the types of music subscribers can expect. The best part of the subscription service is its flexibility. You can skip a month or cancel at any time. And if you don't like a record you receive, you can return it for a refund. Wow, Paul, what an offer. Can I just bring up my calculator here?
Well, do you want me to tell you that the first two albums have already gone out on this scheme And it was The Clash and Pink Floyd.
So the first two were The Clash and Pink Floyd. And just my, I probably could have done this maths in my head, but I chose not to. This service will cost you $300 a year to receive 12 records that you didn't ask for.
Correct.
So have you signed up yet? Oh, you can't because it's America only.
No. The reviews are one star. I'll pick my own. Thank you. One star. Why would anyone want this? One star. Did not like.
Oh, dear.
One star. Too expensive. One star. The Clash and Pink Floyd. Really? One star. What the hell? One star. Go to a dang record store. And so on and so forth.
So how long do we think it will be before this service is quietly dropped?
Oh, I don't think they will. I think there'll be enough people who take it up. Lazy people, busy people, bankers and stuff. They'll just sign up for it. They don't care. They've got disposable income and they'll just accrue all these albums over time.
It's just disgusting, isn't it? $25.
It works for some people, but it's just going to be a load of toot they can't get rid of.
Well, exactly. As wonderful as ABBA are, how many people are going to be happy with paying $25 for an unsolicited ABBA album to arrive on their doorstep? I mean, I don't think you'd be very happy, would you, Paul?
No.
So, listeners, let us know. If anyone's tempted to sign up for this offer, please do let us know, because we'd love to be proved wrong and we'd love to find out that somehow it's good. I mean, the thing is, it's all there in black and white. We know the price. You get one a month. You can't choose it. There is no way in which this can be a better offer than it first seems, is there?
No. It just makes no sense. You just said you have to be incredibly lazy and naive and have plenty of disposable income for this to not bother you.
Well, and the other sad thing is that I would think a lot of people that do this will be getting it as a gift for their niece or nephew or brother or sister or significant other, thinking, oh, well, they like records. That's nice. I'll, you know, they'll appreciate this. And it just means that, you know, a turd that you don't want drops onto your mat once a month. But at least you can get a refund on them, Paul. At least they're committing to the minimum distance selling regulations. What a load of bollocks. Is there anything fun?
Confession time.
Yes, that sounds much more fun. Should we do the jingle?
Paul's Confessional Corner.
Paul, we're lucky enough to have two confessions today. So I'll tell us all about the first one. You can handle the second.
Ooh, lovely.
Anonymous writes, years ago, I craved a rare Japan-only compilation LP containing obscure recordings by or related to a group who would now be described as classic rock. I craved this LP with an intensity way out of proportion with the quality of the recordings it contained. By the early 90s, it was already long out of print and well outside my price range. One day, I came across a copy listed on a US mail order website where it's been misidentified and listed for a couple of dollars. It was missing the obi, but I could not believe my luck. Even with postage to Europe, it was a steal. It was graded VG-, but this website habitually undergraded records, and when it turned up, I was delighted to find it was VG+. A few years later, I was on a record hunting trip to a city I used to visit a few times a year, where I discovered my favourite shop was in the process of computerising its stock for listing on GEMM. Do you remember GEM, Paul?
I do.
The shop was notorious for pricing things on the high side, but it was also guilty of underpricing obscurities or things that it didn't know about. In fact, anything not listed in any of the price guides of that time. And I'd spent quite a few quid there over the years. GEM was now plugging that knowledge gap, and I realised I probably wouldn't be going back. Sure enough, I didn't find anything reasonably priced that day. While having a look around, I spotted the same Japanese LP on display on the wall, with an eye-watering price tag attached, and more importantly, with that elusive obi.
Uh-oh.
Paul, I don't like where this is going.
Oh, dear.
In a fit of absolute lunacy, I slowly, painstakingly edged the obi off the cover while the LP was still on the wall, and after what seemed like an age, finally slipped it off and slipped it into my pocket, all without attracting the attention of staff. Stunned at what I had just done, I slowly walked out of the shop and never went back. The shop closed a few years later, that's your fault, having alienated a large part of its clientele. If all your stock is online and everything has been priced using price guides, why would anyone visit? GEM is gone too now, of course, but I still have that Japanese LP. I am still appalled at the risk I took and still can't quite believe I actually did it. I can only plead temporary insanity. Am I forgiven?
Tricky one.
No, it isn't.
Well, shoplifting.
It's not tricky at all. It's how can we forgive? I mean, there's no... Well, so their justification is that this shop looked stuff up and wasn't cheap, right? That's why it was okay to steal from them. Have I got that basically right?
Kind of.
I honestly don't know if I can absolve them. Paul, I'm going to let you be the
decider. If somebody stole an obby from you...
That is what I was thinking. Well, is what if it happened to our shop? But then I'm thinking that we wouldn't be overpricing this stuff.
No.
And so maybe if this anonymous person wasn't riled by the prices, they might be less likely to do something so egregious to the shop.
I think because of the length of time that's passed, the fact that this person has confessed and asked for forgiveness and the shop was charging rip-off prices, it's close, but I am going to forgive them.
So you'll put length of time that's elapsed in there, will you?
Yes.
So if Peter Sutcliffe gets in touch, come on, Paul. Here we go then. Let's have your confession, then we can be done with
right.
it.
Right. So I just need to preface this. This person is so ashamed of what they've done that the confession came in from an unidentifiable encrypted email address that was just letters and symbols.
Shit.
Seriously.
Okay.
Here's a short but sweet confession for you both. When I'm in a charity shop, I will often slyly pocket the 45 RPM adapters off the singles left unsold to use on my singles with jukebox holes in my own collection. Interested to hear your thoughts on the morality of this behaviour. Tim, this person is stealing from a charity shop.
I mean, I would think what they probably failed to mention, because they were limited for time or space, is that, of course, they drop a few bits of silver into the shop collection box on the counter. I'm pretty certain that they just sort of forgot to. Okay, right. I have, Paul, serious answer.
Go on.
Well, I have occasionally... I have occasionally pinched things from shops, right? my defense. Well, hang on. I know that sounds bad.
Hang on. No. Let's rewind. What things?
Well, they they tend, Paul. They tend to be.
Yes.
Okay. Here's how the logic works in my head. There'll be some kind of ephemera or printed matter in a record shop or toy shop or something like that, or in Woolworths going back, that is not technically for sale.
Right.
So a promotional cutout of Pikachu, for example, or a giant Morrissey poster rolled up in the corner. Now, that's not for sale. They're not allowed to sell it.
Mm.
So how can it be stealing?
Right. But this isn't the same, because these items are for sale. These are...
I would say that...
These are for sale, Tim.
The spiders in the middle of the 7 inches aren't for sale. They're an added bonus.
Oh!
And if you were to steal the adapter, you're not stealing the item that's for sale. You're stealing a bonus thing that happens to come with that particular one. Because there's going to be a mix in that box of jukebox 7s that do have an adapter and ones that don't have an adapter. All you're doing is creating uniformity in the box.
Right, so I'll tell you where I am. I am, if this person has been chucking a pound in on occasion into the little charity box on the counter, I will forgive them. If they haven't, and they're that tight that they've been nicking them from a charity shop to save a few pennies, they are not forgiven.
I like how you've come down harder on this person than on the previous person that objectively was a more serious crime.
Yes. We get to make the rules, Tim. That's the beauty of the confessional corner.
If this confessor ever happens to be in Hastings, they can just come to my record shop where we give those things away for free.
Tim, we've had a listener letter in from Leon Balancic.
Oh, I like a letter.
He says, I live in Slovenia in the EU and I used to order quite a lot of records from the UK before the Brexit.
No.
Even in the first few months after Brexit, not much happened, and the first few records which I ordered just came a little bit slower than before Brexit. when the records came from the UK to Slovenia very quickly. It was maybe in a week. But from the month of May onwards, vinyl records needed a whole month or even more to come to my address.
Wow.
And I must pay some import duties. The result of that will be, unfortunately, that I will end ordering records from the UK, or I will order them only in exceptional circumstances. For example, the vinyl record which I paid £35 for and then paid another £13 for shipping, I also had to pay €23 of import duties.
Wow. Wow.
I don't know how it is in other EU countries, but I assume the situation is similar. So I regret that the Brexit has happened. Well, Leon, so do we, personally, regret yeah, that so the Brexit has happened. I'm going to refer to it now as the Brexit.
Because it gives it an sort of ominous edge, doesn't it? I like it.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Well, this week, Tim, you'll have noticed on the 1st of July, well, they actually delayed it till the 2nd of July, I believe, Discogs have also implemented VAT on orders to from the UK to the EU or from the EU to the UK. Well, actually, anywhere outside of the UK, if you're ordering from, although all of the blurb talked about the EU, it's actually been applied to all countries.
No way.
So I checked Serbia, North Macedonia. Yep. It's because the low value threshold VAT was abolished on the 1st of July. You know, you used to be able to send cheap items, €22, £15. But all you would do, and this is what they got fed up with, everyone would just write a tenner. So everything. I've never had a Discogs item stopped for customs because I always undervalue on the form and mark it as a gift. However, that undervaluation is gone now. Every single item, well, you could still do it to reduce the VAT, but they will now be collecting it. And if you haven't done it in advance, they're going to stop your parcel and go through the whole rigmarole of charging them a fee to collect the VAT.
So those days of helping out the buyer by putting it as a fiver and marking it as a gift will now be impossible through Discogs because Discogs will see the actual value.
Yes.
And will charge the correct VAT. So that buyer knows there is no chance that they can get it, get away with it.
Yeah, and you have to put a slip in from the Discogs page to show that you've paid the VAT to them. Otherwise, it'll get stopped and then they'll get charged.
No way.
Yes.
Well, I've got to use my printer.
Yep.
Fuck that. You know, joking aside, I'm starting to think that Brexit is not a great idea.
It's not great, is it? Let just to clarify, they did originally, because now there was a lot of furore originally when Discogs announced this, because it originally said UK to UK orders that we're going to deploy VAT on as well.
It did seem to, didn't it?
And you don't pay VAT on used goods in the UK unless you have a turnover of, I think, in excess of 85,000. I think it's something like that, isn't it?
I think it is 85,000.
Yeah, I queried that. And the bloke literally replied instantly. I had a few queries. And he said, oh, I'm going to check internally. And then the next day, they knocked it on the head and said, they weren't particularly helpful. I'm not going to lie. The replies we got back from Discogs, he just tried to fob us off with a link. The link to the blog they created was completely impenetrable garbage. And then they updated it and it made it even worse. But the long and the short of it is, the EU and the UK both withdrawing low-value VAT is basically what's caused this. Now, if you're selling EU to EU, you're fine. Discogs won't charge VAT. That's the kicker. So we're now massively uncompetitive compared to Europe. So if you're in Germany, who are you going to buy a record from? The one in France or the one in the UK?
No, Paul, you are wrong. Because one of the benefits of Brexit was to make us more internationally competitive.
Well, and here's the thing. We are no longer in the EU. So we didn't have to remove that low threshold VAT. We could have left it because we're not bound by EU laws anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But we've gone ahead and done it anyway. This is the one time they could have helped out and said, you know what, we don't need to do that. The EU can do it, but we're going to leave it at zero. So when you buy records from the EU, we could have still at least imported them on the cheap, but that's gone as well. It just makes no sense.
It's another of those downbeat episodes, Paul.
Well, Tim,
we're supposed to be in sunlit uplands territory. It's summer. Come on, give me a silver lining.
I have thought of one benefit. If you're a UK-based seller,
and
you're listing your records, okay, when you're pricing them, when you look at the EU prices for them,
yep,
add 20%, and then you, so you can charge more for UK records now in the UK. That will see prices increase as night follows day.
And this is good because, okay, it's good for the seller. It's not good for the consumer.
I didn't say it. I said I've got good news for the seller.
Yeah.
100%.
So because any EU copy of the album will now be increasingly feel out of reach because of the added fees, that slightly more top whack British copy is going to seem more appealing.
Whatever the price says on Discogs, you can add 20%.
Wow.
You can make your copy more expensive than the European copy, but it will still be cheaper if the buyer factors in the fees.
Listeners, if you're a seller, don't listen to what Paul is saying now. Just pretend you didn't hear that last bit and don't, for God's sake, don't do that.
Right, that's enough Brexit.
Cheer me up, Paul.
Yes, well...
maybe a quiz?
I've got an impossible quiz.
Oh, good.
No, the plan is, right, because what I wanted to talk about was people come into your shop all the time, right,
mm-hmm.
with potentially a bag, a laundry bag or something with records in it. And I bet quite often they look slightly perturbed that you can't immediately value them.
Yes.
On the spot.
Yes.
Okay. On Discogs, Tim, on the app, there's a little mm-hmm. feature where if you shake your phone,
yeah,
it'll bring up a random record.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to do that and I'm going to ask you to value whatever it brings up. And you should, in theory, probably not get any of these because it's impossible to value a random item without looking it up.
What have I got to be within? 50 quid?
Well, most of them are going to be cheap 12 inches, so
yeah,
no.
Yeah, all right. Damn. Okay, let's see how this works as a segment, Paul. Here we go.
Let's give it a shake.
Ooh. Listeners, Paul is shaking his phone. It now is pulling a confused face.
Right, first up we have Beanfield, the remix EP1, which was from 1997 in Germany. And it's electro and deep house on 12 inch.
That is worth £1.
£5.
I'll take it.
So you got that one wrong.
Right.
But at least you didn't come out with 200. Right. The Factory Revival EP by Neil Lundstrom, which is from Scandinavia from 2006, and it's techno.
I think I've got a record by him.
Mm.
£6.
I'll give you that. It's a fiver. Well done. You got one right. I didn't think you were going to get any.
Thank you. Ooh. Paul's shaking his phone again.
Ooh.
You do look like a bit of a twat when you're doing this, but I quite like it.
So next up, Darren Price with Mechanize and The Attic from 1995 on Nova Mute. And this is also techno.
Techno. And it's on a Mute subsidiary.
Mm-hmm.
£8.50.
£3. I'm not going to give you the point for that one.
He's shaking it again.
Right. Coco. I Need a Miracle on Positiva from 1997.
Well, Paul.
Now, is this one of the ones or not one of the ones?
Yeah. So, weirdly, Positiva used to be all their stuff was worth about £1.
Correct.
And now random, well, quite a lot of random Positiva releases are now worth more than £1.
30, 40, 50, 60.
£7.
I will give you that because it actually has sold for £6.
Marvellous, thank you.
Oh, right. Madonna, Ghost Town, CDR single promo. Oh, from 2015. So quite a recent-ish Madonna promo on CD.
Do we have a country?
Yes, UK. It's on Polydor.
£12.
Oh, you're bang on the money there. Well done. It's pretty much, it sells for between £10 to £15, so you're spot on. You got another one right. Bloody hell. So
it's almost like I run a record shop. No, but I'm not being cocky because it is, I mean, you're making the point that it's completely random and that, you know, stuff that comes in, who the hell knows what's going to come in and you know, guesswork when it comes to, see, my alarm bells ring for me if someone takes a box of records into a record shop and the proprietor has a little flick through and comes up with an offer. For me, that is the alarming situation because you can be damn sure that that is going to be a phenomenally low blow offer.
Yeah, for sure.
And you also know that it means the person clearly wants to buy the records because they've made an offer. Otherwise, they would just say, oh, not for me, mate. But if they're saying 20 quid, that box probably has in it the Beatles, the Clash, the Smiths.
Oh, for sure.
Sod's law, it really will, because these people are bastards, Paul.
Yep, and I know several of them.
Not all of them. Carry on.
Marshall Jefferson, Ride the Rhythm, from 1999, an original pressing on Trax Records.
Ah, well, it's on Trax.
Mm.
Genre, please.
It is house.
8.
Average is 10, so I'm going to give you that again. You're doing really well.
You genuinely thought I was going to get none of them remotely.
I thought you were not going to get any of these. I thought you were going to come up with some crazy... Right. The Pressure, The Sounds of Blackness, at double 12-inch on AMPM Records from 1997.
£2.70.
No, £11 for that one, I'm afraid.
Oh,
that's,
I do beg
that's
your pardon.
An incorrect answer. That's a bit of a classic, Tim.
Is it? Whatever. When we've had Sounds of Blackness 12s in, they've been worth about £2. But I bow to you. He's shaking his phone again.
Oh, Depeche Mode, The Greatest Hits on Amiga Records from the German Democratic Republic from 1987.
Okay, so there's a lot of copies out there in Eastern Europe, or in Europe, of Amiga pressings. So we've got that, yep, on one side. On the other side, it's Depeche Mode, and their fans are weird twats who will open their wallets for right, anything with DM on. So I don't think it's worth as much as you might think. I reckon it's worth £17.
I am going to give you that because you're bang in the middle. It's worth between 12 and 21.
Come on.
Well done, Tim. That is a brilliant
Thank
guess.
You. I was worried about doing this quiz because I thought it would make me look like a right Charlie, but I'm doing okay. He's shaking his phone again, listeners. You look very camp when you shake your phone because for some reason your head does a little shake as well.
Right, next up, Aptness, with a track called The Answer. It's a trance 12-inch from 1999 on Good As Records, which I think was Graham Gold's label.
I mean, trance from 99, that doesn't excite me. But then trance is back. £2.
Bang on the money.
Well.
I don't know how you did that either.
Are people going to think that I somewhat know my onions, Paul? Just a little bit. That I've got some amount of onion knowledge. I think perhaps more than I thought I did. Come on, let's do these last two. We'll go out with a high.
Oh, got an album. An album. Love Not Money by Everything But The Girl. So it shows you I do have some albums in my collection. That's from 1985. So how much for that? You probably know this, don't you?
I think if that is in pretty decent nick, I'm pretty sure that we put that out as a £5 classic. But I might say £6.
Yep, the average is 8, so I'm definitely going to give you a point there. And the last one. Hits 5. Two double LP compilation from 1986.
Let's say £4.20.
Yeah, the average is a 5. So you've got another one. You actually got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You got 8 right.
What, out of 10?
Yeah.
Did I really? Oh, my God.
You did. You really did. I genuinely thought I'll do this to show that it's impossible to do quick valuations.
Well... I'm so sorry, Paul.
That is incredible.
Wow, that's done my ego no end of good, actually.
Well, do you know what the weird thing is? If you'd done that on me, even though I own them, I wouldn't have got anywhere near that.
Do you think not, really?
No chance. Right, on that bombshell.
Well done, Tim.
Join us...
Sorry. Well done, Tim. Yep.
Join us next time for more adventures in vinyl on We...
Value and Buy...
Records!
Elsewhere on We Made This. Pick a disc.
The chorus feels like it's improvised as well.
It's improvised, like, but I also think it's like respect, because everybody gets a shout out. Busta Rhymes in effect, Shahid is in effect, Five Dog is in effect, and it ends, I think, towards the end. I know towards the end, who's in the house? Ron Carter is in the house. So I kind of think of it. This is going to be very professorial sounding, but if you write a research paper and, you know, you put all your citations of your sources.
Yeah.
It's all the citations. These are all the folks that made this come together.
he's reading the Wikipedia footnotes for this song, isn't he? So
like 30, exactly.
20 years before it came in effect and stuff.
Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
To your theory, Gene Roddenberry, one of his golden rules was that conflict always had to be external, right? Like, it couldn't be internal. You couldn't have, the main drama being between the two people on the show. It always had to be humanity fighting outward, because we were already connected and we had already resolved most of those issues, right? And as Trek has evolved and we've started to incorporate many of the real life drama that can occur between actual people, which I think it's made the show all the better for it.
Yeah.
But I think you're on to something.
Right in the childhood.
The big thing is, Raven has a vision that the job she was going for, she didn't get, because the woman says to Raven's vision, I don't hire black people. We cringed
that
time.
Just the fact that it was done with the actor playing the racist job assistant,
Chloe,
did it with real venom, and the kind of,
she did it throughout everything though. Like,
it
she
was horrible.
She was not so subtle with how she felt about black people. Chelsea couldn't pick up on it.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.